Welcome back to the Period Panel, proudly supported by Active Iron.
So I'm delighted to have you both on the Period Panel. I think to first off get things started, if you could give us an introduction of who you are.
Okay, so thank you so much for having us both. So I'm Dr. Stephanie Uy, so I'm a GP. I'm based in Southwest London. And I was doing NHS work before, but now I mainly do private sessions at a clinic nearby. I've got two young girls. They are 3 and 6, so they keep me busy most of the time when I'm not at work. And yeah, I also run an Instagram page. I guess that's how we sort of found each other. So I share information that I hope is helpful to parents, but based around, you know, children's health, women's health as well, and just kind of day-to-day life, really. And I also host a podcast as well called the Medic Mum Podcast too.
Super, thank you.
Hello, so I'm Kieran. I am Dr. Kieran Rahim, although I hardly ever introduce myself as that because I work as a paediatrician. So I am a mum to 3 very feral, very beautiful children, 2 boys and a little girl who's 18 months. And in my spare time, I'm a paediatrician. So I am a children's doctor. That's what I specialise in. And I basically deal with children right from when they're born. So, you know, prem babies up until sort of adolescence. And 18-year-olds. Steph, I also run an Instagram account, and actually that's how Steph and I know each other. We are friends outside in the real world as well as the Insta mm-hmm. real world. And that is, again, like as myself as Dr. Kieran, and I talk about predominantly children's health, and very occasionally I will talk about women's health related to being a sort of an Asian woman and navigating the healthcare system sort of as that, and sort of the NHS. And then I talk about sort of healthcare inequalities, because, you know, there is no child health without maternal health. And that's something I'm quite passionate about, and sort of talking about the inequalities that exist within our healthcare system.
Super. Thank you so much. Obviously, we are on the Period Panel, so we're here to talk a bit about periods, a bit about menstrual cycle. Kieran, I wanted to start with you. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned there that you're a paediatrician. We've heard it a little bit that girls are getting their periods younger. Is that something that you've seen through your work, or could you give us a bit of an insight into that?
There is some truth in that. So if you look at the research over the sort of last decade, it shows that girls are getting their periods much younger than they were, say, 50 years ago or like a century mm-hmm. ago. So roughly, if you look at in the last 100 years, the girls these days are on average getting their period up to a year or 18 months earlier. We don't really know why it's happening. There is some sort of, I think, conjecture around sort of being related to sort of more of a sedentary lifestyle, and sort of eating foods that aren't wholesome, so, you know, eating mm-hmm. fast food, and there is some research to suggest that it's related to higher body mass index, because we know that having a higher BMI, you know, which isn't the best measure of health, but there is some research that mm-hmm. shows that if you do have a higher BMI, you are more likely to have period related disorders and therefore enter puberty a lot earlier.
And in relation to this, obviously, you know, getting your first period, it can be something that girls can find a bit worrying. They're getting to know their bodies, understanding all of the changes that they're going through. What's your advice, you know, for parents, just in terms of educating the girls and ensuring that they're not afraid or not scared when they get their first period, particularly if they are becoming younger?
So I think the first step really is self-education. So, you know, I often see parents who don't know what puberty is, and despite having been through it themselves, they don't really know the steps of puberty. And a lot of people assume that having your first period is when you start puberty, when it actually isn't. It's quite far down the line after puberty begins that you get your period. So I think starting to educate yourself, and then, you know, thinking about preparing your home for this, you know, eventuality that's going to happen. So educating yourself, talking to your family members, and then talking to your girl about what's about to happen, and preparing her for the changes that are going to happen to her body, to her mind, you know, how she may feel, and then obviously the practicality of having periods and how you may navigate school, which is a lot something that a lot of girls are embarrassed about and shy about. And you know, even when I see them in clinic or in ED, they just don't want to talk to me about it, and that's because it hasn't been discussed in a sort of open, factual manner. And this is biology we're talking about. So this is not, you know, something to be ashamed of. This is just basic female biology. And I think empowering girls to know what happens to their body early on really sets the tone for the rest of forever. And what you want is young girls who will grow up to be women that understand their cycle and how it affects them and how they can then navigate womanhood, you know, and it all starts very, very early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned that it's biology, it's going to be about 50% of the population are going to experience a menstrual cycle and a period. So it should be really, you know, something that we're comfortable talking about and something that we should absolutely be ensuring that, you know, girls aren't afraid of and that they are, as you mentioned, like feeling empowered, you know, being a woman and being a girl and you know, all that goes with it. Stephanie, can you remember getting your first period?
I do. It's amazing how some of these moments in your life, they just stay with you forever, don't they? And I remember it so vividly. So I was a bit older than most of my friends. So I was 15 when I got my first period. And actually, I remember the first girl in our year at school, she got her period when she was, I think she was 11. And it would, I started secondary school and someone had, was already having periods. So there was a bit of, you know, oh, everyone knew who started their periods as if it was this thing to know about. And I think I felt a little bit left out almost that it hadn't happened to me. And then it happened. It was in the morning. I remember I got up, went to the bathroom, went to the toilet, and just saw, you know, that I had obviously started my period. And then the first person that I saw when I came out of the bathroom was my dad. And I just said to him, I said, I think I've started my period. And bless him, he just said, okay, go ask your mom. She's in the bed, like she's in the room. Just go and ask her. So I went and asked her and she gave me some sanitary towels. And so I put them, used them and used them throughout the day. But they were, they reminded me of the maternity pads that we have now. They were so thick. And I remember they were so uncomfortable. It just felt like I was wearing a nappy. And I just thought, what on earth is going on here? And I didn't discover, you know, other types of sanitary protection, so like tampons, until a year or so later, just because it, again, it's just not something that I knew about or had spoken about that much. And, you know, that was a complete game changer, but I definitely kind of struggled through, I would say, for the first year or so. I was quite lucky they weren't particularly heavy or painful. But for me, it was the kind of the form of the sanitary protection that just really made me feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it's interesting mentioning that it felt like a nappy. It's like you've regressed instead of progressed as a person, or you know, going through puberty. But Kieran, what about you? Can you remember your first experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Steph said, it's one of those things that is like etched in your mind, isn't it? I mean, I was very fortunate in that. I mean, so I started my period quite young. I was in year six of primary school, so between the ages of 10 and 11. I'm a June baby, so I was definitely 10. And, you know, we had just had sex education and we'd been through sort of, you know, what happens to your body. And then I remember like coming home and talking with my mum about it, who thankfully was just as factual and sort of matter of fact of things as she ought to have been. And then interestingly, she had like a lot of cultural taboos about it later, you know, and it was, for me, it was in the evening. I remember going to the bathroom and things saying, oh, I think this is my period, and coming out and talking to my mum. And absolutely, Steph, like I hated the sanitary towels. I was like, it feels squidgy and I don't know how else to describe it. And in the beginning, your periods, you know, when you first start your periods, they're not necessarily heavy and they're not regular. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. And I didn't discover tampons till much later, like I'm talking years, because it's such a cultural taboo then in Asian culture, because it was associated with sort of, you could only use a tampon if you weren't a virgin. And so I was like, oh my God, if I get seen with a tampon, that's like, you know, my like family are going to be shamed forever. And you know, we have so much more options now, which I think is fantastic. But this is again part of the reason why I'm so like keen for us to have like conversations like this to normalize it so girls and, you know, parents of girls know what to expect.
Absolutely. And I'd love to touch on the cultural perspectives a little bit later. In relation to periods and menstrual cycle, you know, women's health in general sometimes can be taboo topics. And I know you're both passionate about discussing them. What were your experiences then growing up and then as you obviously have become trained in doctors and in your careers?
Yeah, so I mean, again, we had sex education at school, as I think most people did, but it was mainly more around the sex education part rather than you are females that are growing up and going through all of these changes. So here's what to expect. It was more, you know, this is not to get pregnant, basically. Like, you know, that's kind of an overriding thing of what I can remember. And yeah. You know, unless I was just so shocked at seeing a condom, I don't know. Maybe that's why I remember it more vividly, but it seemed to be focused more on that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even growing up and with my group of friends, with only like a few close friends, would we kind of talk more openly about, say, problems that we were having with our periods and things. But it wasn't something I saw much of. It wasn't something that we spoke much about at home either. I think maybe mm-hmm. that is also a cultural thing. So I'm Chinese, you know, and I grew up in a fairly, I would say, kind of like a hybrid household, you know, very traditional in terms of cultural aspects, but, you know, maybe less traditional in terms of I played sport and, you know, not many Chinese girls or, you know, boys played sport, that type of thing. But either way, that meant that the conversations that we had around women's health and even just periods, talking about sex, we, you know, you just didn't go there with your parents. And so now it's quite interesting being a GP, seeing the other side of things in the clinic, but also then as a mum and bringing up two girls and me thinking, mm-hmm. how am I going to navigate this with mm-hmm. them this time round? So yeah, I definitely think for me there was a lot of taboo around everything mm. growing up and kind of still to an extent now as well. There are some certain things that I think, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about that, or maybe I shouldn't say that, but actually that's even more reason to do mm. it. And so I love it when I go on Instagram or, you know, social media and I see people who are so openly saying, you know, things, you know, talking about women's health in such an open and honest way. And I think I really appreciate that, because even I still need a little bit of a push sometimes as well to kind of get over that.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think there's a lot of people like that, you know, the more that we talk about things and the more that we see other people, other mm-hmm. women talking about some subjects, whether it is related to women's health or whatever it might be, it can kind of break down those barriers and you kind of say, no, it is totally fine to talk about it. And, you know, obviously we're just trying to educate and empower as many girls and women as possible, you know, around women's health during periods, menstrual cycle, and with a particular view on sport, I suppose, at her sport. In relation to, you know, you've experienced a bit of taboo, maybe not really, really open conversation, you know, growing up, like in terms of your experience as children, teenagers, and as women, do you think that we're starting to see change? Have we progressed? Are we making girls and women feel more comfortable around women's health, or how far do we still have to go?
I mean, I think there is change happening, and I think it's slow. And I think part of the problem is that women's health hasn't really been on like a political agenda of any sort. Mm-hmm. So if you look at like sort of funding and NHS funding, it's always neglected, which means that there isn't real investment into women and into their health and the issues they face. And that means that the things that affect them aren't talked about readily, you know. I mean, if you look at, I mean, platforms such as Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, things like vulva and vagina are banned words because, you know, somehow they're sexualized all the time, but actually it's just female anatomy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the sort of adult population can't, you know, identify female anatomy correctly. Like, how many times you watch movies and, you know, things are referred to as the vagina and you're like, that is not the vagina. Like, it's like, it's a real bugbear of mine. So I do think that conversation is happening, but I sadly do think it's happening in silos. And sometimes, like, you can live in echo chambers. So, you know, the way sort of the social media algorithm works and the way sort of the online world works, you get shown things you interact with. So there is some onus on the person to be going to be looking for that information, for it to be presented to you. I still think there's a lot of way to go about understanding women's health and periods and you know, how like hormones affect your cycle and how your cycle may affect things like everyday functioning. You know, it's taken me, I'm in my 30s, it's taken me until my third baby almost to really understand my cycle and know that, you know, I'm going to have two really great weeks, one semi-great week and one week where I'm really like really tired and exhausted. And I've spent years just trying to think like, oh, it must just be me, but actually it's my biology and that's how my body works. And now I can do things to fit that biology rather than making my body want to fit things around me. Like, I know I need to take things slow or that I can pump things up. So I do think we have a long way to go.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I think it can take like a decade or more sometimes for women to really like get a handle on their bodies and understanding their menstrual cycle. And I suppose from my personal perspective, like there's a couple of things I've discovered, but like most of the time I've had like an okay experience, and just watching friends or hearing stories from other people, like, you know, not discovering you know, that they had things like endometriosis or other things, and that kind of, you know, taking on being a bit of a martyr, and like that's just what it's like to be a woman, and that like having more conversation can identify if you are experiencing something that is maybe a little bit out of normal, and then trying to put things in place to, you know, alleviate some of that pain or stress, and just be able to get on with life and do all the things that you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stephanie, what about you? Do you think that we've seen much change or in your own surroundings or in your own life, have you made any changes?
So yeah, but I guess I completely agree with what Kieran said as well, in that there is some change and more people are talking about it, but it's in specific spaces, so you sort of have to go to it. But day to day, I would say that in clinic, I do see more women coming in and talking about symptoms that they've noticed. I know we might come on to it later, but specifically, actually, a lot more women are coming in talking about menopausal symptoms as well. Mm-hmm. But also problematic periods, and they'll just say, you know, I've been dealing with this for how many years, and I think I just, you know, I've decided I just need to come in and speak to someone and try and get things sorted. So for me, that is positive, but I'm sure for every person that's coming in, there are, you know, tens of 20s, whatever, people who are still at home who, you know, haven't quite been able to make that leap or been able to feel like they can just yet, which is a real shame, but hopefully that's something that will continue to improve gradually. I guess at home, yeah, like I was saying, I've got two little girls, so just teaching them to, you know, little bits as they go along. My eldest is six, so she, you know, when you're in a family of four in a house, there will be some times where she'll be like, "What's that?" And I've noticed that she was referring to. Like the vulval area as bottom. She'd say, "Oh, you know, that's the bottom," or something, and I was like, no, actually this is your bottom, and you know, trying to just teach her the correct terminology, just as like a bit of a foundation, and then gradually, you know, that will hopefully like add to that, and using that as a foundation. We've already got an email from the school to say that they'll be starting to do some form of sex education with them actually this term, so she's in year one, and that it will be based around anatomy mainly, and sort of talking to them about it rather than the actual kind of other sex education part of things. So I think that's really interesting that they are starting to think about that at her age, because I certainly didn't have that at all. You know, our sex education was when we were in secondary school. So I think that's you know, really good in terms of education and helping them just to understand their own bodies as well. So that's something that will gradually come, I'm sure. I'm not quite prepared as to what to say. I think, you know, I'll just wing it.
A few years to go.
We're delighted to be working with Active Iron for season 2 of the Period panel. I myself have been taking their supplements for over a year and have had a really positive experience. One of the best things about Active Iron is the fact that it's so gentle on the stomach. So now let's dive back into the Period panel.
That's really interesting and positive to hear, I suppose, from a school perspective. You know, I think the schools and families working together can, you know, open those conversations. And as you said, like talking about it from like a biology perspective and starting to introduce it rather than, I think I remember a girl fainting in our class and you know, you said you remember a bit of shock and that type of thing. And I think it can, if it's a gradual conversation and it's built more into, you know, the curriculum year on year, it can make it more normal and kind of less, like you mentioned, like less of a shock. I think it's really interesting and something that I'm really interested to talk to both of you about is you both mentioned, you know, experiencing, you know, differences in culture and you know, kind of different opinions in culture. I'd love to hear more about that and share that with our audience in relation to menstrual cycle and periods. You know, it's in cultures, it's in different parts of the world. Kieran, if we could start with you and you could share some insight.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess my experience is very similar to Steph. I mean, I also grew up in a hybrid, I would say, family, in that we were very traditional and cultural about certain aspects of life and then sort of really, I would say, westernized in other aspects. So, you know, growing up, like in the South Asian culture, periods are just not something you talk about. It's a very private thing. So I remember for years I wasn't even allowed to let, like, I grew up, I'm an only girl, so I have three brothers, so I could not let them know or my dad know that I was on my period. Like, you'd have to dispose of like menstrual products really discreetly, like there would have to be no evidence of you being on your period. And interestingly, I only have a girl now and I have two boys, and I'm really open about, you know, with my boys about, you know, what periods are and why mum doesn't do certain things while she's on her period. So like, I'm a Muslim woman, and when Muslim women are on periods, they don't pray, and prayer is a big part of our life. So, you know, for a week, every like 3 weeks, I don't pray, and they have questions. And I think it's about being factual about them, that, you know, I'm tired during that period, so I don't have to pray. And I might be more sleepier and a bit more crankier. And it's understanding, you know, normalizing biology for my boys as well, because they will hopefully grow up and, you know, and have to navigate similar issues perhaps with their partners or their friends who are girls. And I don't want it to be as embarrassing as it was, because God, I remember being in high school, and if a boy found like a tampon or like a sanitary, it was the end of like your social, like you know, future. It was so embarrassing, and we have to really edge away from that. And even to this day, you know, periods in the South Asian community are still such a taboo topic. So women get really upset if you discuss it. And I'm I wear a hijab and I'm very open about these things on my social media platform. And I will talk about things like period and sex as a Muslim woman, or, you know, talking to periods about my boys, or having discussions with my husband, or things like period pants. And people are still like, you know, on the one hand, they're very grateful that we're having these conversations, but then there are women who are like, well, this is a very private matter, and we should have like a level of shame and modesty. And it's really interesting that modesty is associated with sort of hiding behind this idea that periods are still a very private matter, when yes they are. You know, no, not everyone needs to know when you're on your period, but actually talking about periods is important, because that's how you know if things are normal, that's how you know if things aren't going the right way. Yeah. I remember not having my period when I was applying to medical school, which probably the most stressful time of my life, and I didn't have a period for 8 months, and I was convinced I was pregnant, having not had sex before. I was like, why have I not got my period? And I remember like talking to my mum about it, and she was like, oh my God, like, you had sex. And I was like, no, but I haven't had my period. But, you know, now I know it's pretty normal, like stress and hormones and stuff. But I didn't, and I didn't have anybody to speak to, because the assumption was if I told someone, I was being promiscuous in my private life. So I do think, I still think there's a lot of taboo in lots of communities regarding a very basic biology, sadly.
And what kind of impact do you think that has kind of on girls and women? Like, you're talking about, know, obviously a personal experience there. And, you know, if you maybe had someone to talk to that could share that knowledge, like you would have been less stressed about it. And, you know, been able to maybe go through the experience with a little bit more comfort.
I mean, it really shapes my practice. So when girls come in and I take like a medical history, I mean, they could be in, I don't know, for a broken finger, but I will still take that period history and make sure that they know what their options are. And interestingly, you can tell the girls that have had these conversations at home where it's open and it's talked about versus the ones that are so shy that they won't even say the word period. You know, mm-hmm. they'll have like other alternative names for it. They won't talk about it. They'll giggle. And these are teenagers that are going to soon become women and go out into the world. And you know, it is sad, but I make a point to talk about it, even if it's for 5 minutes. Say, you know, if you're having heavy periods, go see your GP. If you're having painful periods, you go see your GP. These are your options in terms of, you know, I'm a big advocate for menstrual underwear. Like, it's been life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I share with a lot of my patients, whether they want to hear it or not, sadly.
No, I think that's really interesting and really positive. I was over at an event with Chelsea a couple of weeks ago, and I met a couple of Muslim girls that were involved in football, and they were talking about sport, and we were talking about periods and menstrual cycle a bit. And like you mentioned, like period pants can be such a game changer for girls that do want to be involved in sport. Could you talk to us a bit more about the views of the different period products and what have the likes of period pants being available, I suppose, done in terms of, you know, comforting girls and you know, making things like sport more accessible?
I mean, it's not just sport more accessible, it's life, isn't it? I mean, I don't know about you, Steph, but when we were at school, you weren't necessarily allowed to go to the bathroom in the middle of your lesson to change your sanitary towel, and I didn't wear tampons, so it was. And then I was really conscious that it made like this weird rustling sound that I was convinced the whole class could hear. And the thing is, it's embarrassing, and girls still that are using these products are still really embarrassed, because where do they change, you know, their tampons or their sanitary towels? And we know, like, girls from ethnic backgrounds do have heavier periods, particularly in their teenage years. And so, you know, then having that trauma of being like, have I leaked? Like, is the chair now covered in blood? And so I think period pants have been a complete game changer, particularly because you can now get like maxi 24-hour ones, which is what I say to girls that have heavy periods. I'm like, this is what you use when you're in lesson and until you get a break, and you get like these wet bags and you can change them. And that's what I use when I'm on call. Like, and you know, sometimes you go 8-9 hours without being able to make it to a bathroom. So they have been a game changer. And in sports, like, you can do so much with them. You don't have to worry about leaking. You don't have to worry about like this weird and rustling noise, which I just think, you know, and also things like swimming, you now get swim underwear, right? Yeah. Like, and it's just, I just think they're amazing. Honestly, like, it took me well into like my mid-30s after my second child to discover them. And I used them postpartum this time round when I had my baby 18 months ago. And it was so different to using those sort of disposable underwear like that I had used for my like first two, and those like almost like, you know, you get like those incontinence underwear. That's what I was using, because I was like, I bled so much, and I was like, oh, these have period pants have changed my life quite genuinely.
I think it's so good to be able to raise awareness about the products that are out there, and it can make such an impact, you know, for girls and women, as you said, in life and sport, like whatever it might be, just to keep doing what they want to do. Stephanie, from your perspective, could you give us a bit of an insight, you know, into the cultural experience that you have had?
Yeah, so I completely, again, completely agree with Kieran. So I haven't looked at period pants, but I actually did think about them the other day, because they were on the back of a toilet door. And I thought, actually, I need to give them a go, because I think for me, my whole life since I started having periods, the thing that worries me the most is always the leaking. And there have been times, I remember there was one time where I did leak at school. And my friend, you know, we got up to go to lesson and we were on the way. And I would always, again, you know, making sure you've got the stuff in the bag, because then No, you're planning out your route. You're like, okay, I've got stuff in my bag now, and then I'm going to go and I'm going to go past the toilet so I can go in there. And, you know, you'd have to be so meticulous and think so far ahead. I remember her saying, look, Steph, I think you've leaked. And I was like mortified that that had happened. And so ever since then, you know, I'm always so careful at checking and things. And yeah, I think the products that are available now are incredible, and they make me feel so much more comfortable. So I've actually started using menstrual cups recently, I would say for the best part of a year or so. And again, for me, they've been a game changer as well. And just so much easier to use when you're about out and about, because you don't have to worry about carrying anything with you. As long as there is a toilet that you can get to, and if there's a sink, even great. But if not, you know, you can kind of make do and you'll be fine. But again, I can imagine that the thought of that and using something like a cup, probably similar to how I felt when I thought about tampons, is quite daunting, because you think, well, I'm just not sure what I'm doing with this and where I'm putting it. Because it can be, so that's such a huge barrier. But if you can educate girls on women, how to use it correctly, and make it like a very open conversation, then it will just give people the confidence to feel like they can start using them themselves as well.
For sure. Kieran, in relation to periods, we've seen that this can be a reason that girls drop out of sport. Have you seen this with your patients? And I suppose, how have you kind of dealt with this?
I mean, to be honest, no, I just think teenage girls, teenagers generally in sport, it's hard to get them to do it. They're at that age where they, you know, their brains are changing. So often they want to rest and sleep and sort of navigate those things. I have to be honest, I think girls are much more active in sport now than they were when I was at school. I was very active. I did basketball, and I was often referred to as a tomboy and all of those, you know, phrases that we wouldn't use now. And I don't think it's holding girls as back as much as it did, say, a decade ago. And I think they have a lot more options. And I think schools are a lot more understanding and sort of, you know, encouraging girls. And I think the message around sports and women has really changed, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. You see, you know, like women that are achieving great things in athletics or football or so many other things. And it's just so inspiring. What I would like to see actually is more sort of women from ethnic minorities in sport. I think that has a long way to go, again, for cultural and taboo reasons. But also, you know, you can't, I have a colleague, Dr. Ronks, who's a famous doctor, actually, isn't she? She's on Operation Ouch. And she talks, what do they talk about? They talk about you can't be what you can't see. And that's why I think it's really important. And their message is always to get women and girls out there represented. And that's all shapes, all sizes, all sort of backgrounds, which I think is really important.
Yeah, I think, you know, from the cultural perspective at that Chelsea event, I met people from so many different backgrounds, and they're trying to be, you know, the leaders in their respective communities and trying to be the examples, which is really inspiring, as you said, to see. So hopefully in another 10 or 15 years, we'll see, you know, even more change. But it's great to hear that you have seen change already. And I think, you know, some of the products that we've mentioned certainly can, you know, kind of help alleviate the stresses when it comes to having, you know, period and menstrual cycle in relation to sport. Stephanie, could you talk to us a bit about the positive impact that sport could have on menstrual cycle and on symptoms?
Yeah, so I think that the kind of default way of thinking is that actually it's maybe best not to do sport, or some people might not feel like it whilst they're on their period. And that's obviously absolutely fine. But I think that there are a group of people who certainly find that it can help their symptoms. So if you're feeling particularly bloated or you're feeling a bit sluggish, actually going out and, you know, doing whatever exercise you might do, doesn't have to be like going for a really long run, but even going out and doing a quick walk, for example, or, you know, anything that you enjoy can actually be really helpful. I think it also comes back to the conversation we were having just now about having period products that make you feel like you can do that. And if you do, I think lots of people do find it really helpful. And even myself, I think I sometimes feel like, oh God, it's the last thing I'd want to do. But actually, once you're doing it, you know, you're in the gym or, like, you know, lifting some weights or something, actually it does make me feel a lot better as well.
But yeah, equally, sometimes it's, go ahead.
I was going to say equally, I think it's really important to know your cycle. And this is where I think it comes in, because actually for some women, exercising in their period is the last thing they ought to be doing, because, you know, it's for some women, their levels are like, their hormonal levels are really low. They don't want to be doing stuff. And it's about listening to your body. Mm-hmm. And I'm like you, Steph. I find like I can still work out on my periods, but I can't do as much. So I have to change things up. So whereas I'm normally a runner, I won't ever run on my period anymore, because actually it depletes me for the rest of the day. So I might go for a walk instead. And I think that's where the message needs to be, that you need to know your cycle and mm-hmm. what works mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where exercise can also be so helpful, because it can help you understand your cycle as well. Mm-hmm. And you may notice that there are times in your cycle where you think, God, I'm nailing this, like I'm doing really well. And you know that that's the period to then kind of, you know, where you can push yourself a little bit more each month.
For sure. And Stephanie, you have a focus on women's health. Obviously, like, both of you create a lot of content trying to educate people and share all the knowledge that you have. But in relation to women's health, Stephanie, like, what are some of the key things that, you know, you come across in your work and you're trying to raise awareness about?
I think really as a sort of basic, it's just a basic understanding and just knowing what's normal for you, and mm-hmm. understanding what it is that you can go and talk to the doctor about. Obviously, you can go and talk to the doctor about anything, but you know, when people say, oh, well, what does a heavy period mean? Because some people will be changing their pads like every hour or so, and they're just used to that because they think it's normal. But actually, if you're on maximum absorbency sanitary protection, you're having to still change every half an hour to an hour, you're passing clots, things like that, then actually that is something that you can flag and raise and discuss with it. So it's just, yeah, understanding your normal, but also the points at which you would go and speak to a doctor about it. And just really, yes, yeah, about empowering women and to be able to go and think that they can talk about it as well, and they're not wasting people's time, and that it is definitely a conversation that's worth having.
Mm-hmm. And then something that I wanted to touch on in relation to pregnancy, whoever feels most comfortable answering, can you talk to us a little bit about iron supplementation when pregnant? Is it something that women should be looking at?
I think a lot of women women generally are iron deficient. If you look at across all the data tells us across the world, no matter what ethnicity you are, majority of women are iron deficient, and that's because of periods really. And most of us don't eat enough iron. And I think the problem with sort of traditional supplementation is that there's a lot of gastric side effects. So when you are pregnant, we know there is an increased iron demand on your body. Mm-hmm. You know, your cardiac output increases by about 40%. And so you tend to feel more depleted and more tired. And if you have a low sort of starting level, even before you get pregnant, then you go into pregnancy, you are more likely to need things like iron infusion. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my last pregnancy, I needed them twice, just because I started on an okay level and then I just completely depleted. And I think women should know their body. And you know, something that I had to really fight for in my last pregnancy was to get my iron levels checked, actually. Mm-hmm. And then having to have a conversation about actually what's normal and what isn't. And, you know, a lot of people think that if you have an okay hemoglobin, which is, you know, a measure of how well your sort of blood cells are saturating oxygen, that's okay. But actually the hemoglobin is sort of not the best way to check iron levels, and then knowing what a normal iron storage is and how iron sort of is transported and stored in your body is so important. And this is, you know, this is basic science, anyone can look it up. You don't have to be a healthcare professional, you don't have to be a medic, but actually it's about having that conversation with your GP and then thinking about iron supplementation. I did take iron supplementation after I had my iron transfusions, because I was like, I don't want to, I had two back to back in like the mm-hmm. space of a week, and then I was like, I don't ever want to be here again. So then I was on it for the rest of my pregnancy, and I didn't take the NHS ones because I have really bad side effects with them, like nausea and constipation, which is the last thing I need when I'm pregnant.
Yeah, for sure. I know that's really interesting, and thanks for sharing your story on that. I know you mentioned menopause earlier as well. Stephanie, you talk a lot about menopause and educate people in relation to that. From an educational perspective, why don't we learn about the menopause sooner? It feels like we only learn about it, you know, once we start experiencing it as women.
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I'm not really sure. I guess it's rolled up in or just general about, you know, women's health topics and why we aren't as aware of them and why we don't look into them more. And I think a lot of it is probably based around what Kieran touched on earlier about kind of funding and, you know, that kind of drive and where that comes from. Mm-hmm. But I think that certainly more people are talking about it now. I think a lot more celebrities as well are talking about it. Davina McCall, you know, she's very well known for sharing her experience of it. And because of her, again, I've seen so many women who have come to clinic talking about it, which I think is great. Because actually the average age of menopause in the UK is about 50, 51. And so you think, okay, we're all worried about periods. Yes, that is certainly true. But then there will come a point where we don't worry about periods. And menopause is not something that happens to really old people. You know, 51 is not really old at all. So you could still be living and be post-menopausal for a good 20, 30, 40 years. And we just don't know anything about it. So I think that it's, yeah, again, another really important topic to be talking about as well, and knowing that you can go and see your GP and talk to them about treatment options.
Yeah, I suppose while we're on it and while we want to share as much education as we can, can you tell us about it? Can you give our listeners the answer? What is it in simple terms?
Yeah, so essentially your ovaries, when you're going through, puberty, when you're having periods, your ovaries are producing estrogen, and that level obviously varies during the menstrual cycle. But as you approach the menopause, your ovaries start producing less estrogen and they essentially start shutting down. And it's that drop in estrogen levels that kind of brings on all of the symptoms. And a lot of people will think about hot flushes, and that's kind of what most people know about. But really, it's kind of head to toe. So you can notice skin changes, you can notice vaginal dryness, increase urine infections, you can notice brain fog. That's a huge thing that women always talk about, kind of impaired concentration, poor memory. You can also notice weight gain as well, mood changes, anxiety, you know, more irritability, a whole host of symptoms as well that goes all along with it. And I think that if you decide to have certain treatment options, people find it, you know, absolutely life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Look, I know we've touched on a lot of subjects there. I know we're a little tight on time. Thank you so much to both of you for sharing your experiences, sharing all of the knowledge. I know it's great to have two doctors on to give us the real insight and the healthcare knowledge that you both have. So thank you so much for joining us on the Period Panel.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Period Panel. Thanks for listening. Be sure to connect with Her Sport across all of the social media platforms, particularly on Instagram, because we'll be putting up a question box before we shoot every episode. Our episodes will be a combination of athletes and health experts, and we'll direct your question to the person that's best able to answer. We hope to see you again at the next episode of the Period Panel.